Grab your bat microphone, it's time to start the show. Like a court of owls, the mystery is starting to grow. Let there be no debate, it's about to begin. Keen like Bruce Wayne, quick like Tim Drake, fierce like Damien. Grab your headphones, listen up, you know you love it. Drop the facade. Like the Dark Knight Detective, they've got some perspective. They're a pure crime-fighting collective. It's the Bat Pod.
Welcome to the Bat Pod. My name is Bill Beer, and tonight we are part of JL May. We're recovering Batman Blackest Night. I just want to give a big thank you to Chad from the Lantern Cast for letting us be a part of JL May. Speaking of which, you can go to hashtag JL May on Twitter and find all the podcasting coverage, which starts with the podcasts of Oa, Blackest Night number 0 and Green Lantern 43, Chris and Reggie's Cosmic Treadmill, Blackest Night number 1, The Idle Head of Diablo, Blackest Night number 2 and Green Lantern 44, Fire and Water Podcast, Blackest Night number 3, Head Speaks, Blackest Night number 4, Coffee and Comics Podcast, Blackest Night number 5, The Long Box Crusade, Blackest Night number 6, The Lantern Cast, Blackest Night number 7, number 8, and Green Lantern number 52, Waiting for Doom, Doom Patrol number 4 and 5, Task Force X, Suicide Squad 67, Secret 6, 17 through 18, Justice First Dawn, Justice League 38 through 40, Coffee and Comics Podcast, Adventure Comics number 4 through 7, Untold Tales of Blackest Night number 1, Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour, Starman number 81, Dr. DC Podcast, Booster Gold number 26 through 27, The Birds of Prey Podcast, JSA Mini 1 through 3, and lastly, the Absolute DC Podcast, Blackest Night Flash number 1 through 3.
The Batpod is a spoiler podcast. Please read the comics we're reviewing so you can enjoy the show.
We are a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network.
Joining me tonight is Martin Ferretti, Jay Loving, and last but not least, Ronnie Barron.
Hello.
Hello.
How's everybody doing?
Fantastic.
Doing well.
Tonight we're going to cover Batman Blackest Night number 1 through 3. Your writer is Peter Tomasi. Your penciler is Adrian Saif. Inkers John Dell and Vincent Sifuentes. I'm sure I got that incorrect. Colorist Nia Rufinino. Letter John Hill. Cover Andy Kubert, Alex Sinclair. Variant cover Bill Sienkiewicz, Adam Slegman, and Eddie Berganza, editors. So Bruce Wayne is dead, and Black Hand is carrying his skull around, and black rings are reanimating the dead, including Dick and Tim's parents, and some classic Gotham villains. And also Dead Man enters to help Batman and Robin save the day. So it's been 10 years since this crossover has happened. What did you all think of the main crossover?
I love the main crossover. I told you guys it's one of my favorite DC events. This one and Brightest Day, I just love those.
I enjoyed revisiting this, and there's a couple things that I didn't pay attention to or remember from before, like when it was coming out. So I'm glad we picked this and was able to do it for this reason.
I enjoyed what I read of the main crossover. I didn't read all of the books that were in this, but what I did read, I enjoyed.
Yeah, it was a lot of books. I really enjoyed it. The one thing that I didn't remember going back and revisiting this is, you know, the dead that get the black rings, they're like eating the hearts full of emotion. I didn't remember that for some reason. And in this particular crossover, we have Batman, who's Dick Grayson.
I love Dick Grayson as Batman. He's the best Batman. Come at me.
don't go that far, but I definitely loved that era when, yeah, I think Dick as Batman and Damian as Robin were just a perfect match.
Yeah, I think all that started after Final Crisis, right? When Bruce gets lost in time.
Right, because you see some aspects of that in Red Robin in this particular book, you know, still searching for Bruce in the Red Robin series.
Yep.
And that sort of crossovers in here. But the one character that pops up pretty quick in this crossover is Deadman, and this is like one of the better Deadman stories that I can remember. Now, I haven't read a ton of Deadman, but I really enjoyed how he was used in the story.
I think he's had some interesting stuff, right? I think Neil Adams likes to play with Deadman a lot. I'm not the biggest fan of Neil Adams when he writes books. I do enjoy the art, though, quite a bit. I think I agree. This one's really good. He's been in a few other things. There was that Flashpoint book that had Deadman. It was Deadman and the Flying Graysons. Some of that reminded me of this particular book. And I do wonder if there was any inspiration for that particular book. I think it was it a one-shot? It might have been a miniseries. But it was like a what-if story with Deadman working at the circus with the Flying Graysons. And some of that reminded me of it because in this book we do see the Flying Graysons show up, right? When they become Black Lanterns.
Yeah, absolutely. And you gotta wonder, when these rings reanimate the dead, they must have some memory of who they were, because they're going and seeking out, like, Dick and Tim to get their emotions. I guess their emotions up, because they can see the different emotions of the color spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and basically they're feeding off the fear, too, right?
All emotion. Because you had the rage there for a while, and then, yep, you know, just everything.
Yeah, there was that really creepy sequence with the Trigger Twins when they're talking about all the emotions that they feed on. Right before they start cutting out the hearts of the GCPD.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think Bill was right, though. I think they seem to get more power from the negative emotions, or they draw more power from that, which is a little bit of a trope. I mean, things we've seen that in, I've seen it in other areas and other stories, comic books and related, but it's they did effectively here. I thought Tomasi wrote it.
I think it would have been really interesting if this had been a little bit longer, instead of three issues, maybe like four or five, and going into that, because there was some like really strong horror aspects to that dynamic, right? When the Drakes trying to get Tim to come in and like save Tim's dad before
Tony Zuko.
Yeah, Zuko. The Blockbuster's in there too, right? Right before Zuko shows up. No, Blockbuster's with Dick, because Blockbuster was a Dick Grayson villain. And then you have the whole thing with the Trapeze Act and the Flying Graysons. I thought that was well done. You know, Jay mentioned it being kind of a trope. I've seen this done in several horror books. In some ways, Ronnie, this reminds me a little bit of like A Walk Through Hell. It's got some vibes of that. And I think that's really interesting if they had played with that horror aspect a little bit more. Because the first issue of this series really spent a whole lot of time introducing the whole thing. And it's not really till issue two that we really start getting somewhere.
No. You see the villains that come back, and they're very classic villains. You know, yep, you got King Snake, you got the Ventriloquist, you got Magpie. She's a good one.
Mm-hmm. She's great. Worst costume ever.
Deacon Blackfire.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Trigger Twins. Abattoir. KG Beast,
yes. Yeah, so it was kind of neat to see some of those characters. And when they're revived, they go by their, you know, they're saying their actual given name. They're not their code name or supervillain name. So one scene that wasn't in there but is pretty big scene is where Green Lantern smashes into the Bat Signal.
Mm-hmm.
But you see the after effects at the end of the first issue because the bat signal is on and you can see the cracks in it and that sort of thing. And that's what leads them to go to Gotham City PD.
Yeah, I thought it was so interesting how much has changed at DC in just 10 years, right? Because Barbara's still in the wheelchair. Tim is still Red Robin. I mean, you got Bruce gone. There's a lot of characters that aren't there, right? Like Signal, Ronnie's favorite, and a few others. So things have changed quite a bit since this time, and it's only been 10 years. But I don't think the story necessarily aged badly. I think Tomasi actually wrote a fantastic Damien. I'm telling Tomasi must be born to write Damien. I think he really captures a lot of what I like about that character.
I would agree. He writes Damien very well. Not quite as good as Morrison did, but, but very close.
Very close.
I mean, he captured, like, in a book that is as serious as this and as compact. You talked about how, you know, a lot happens in three issues. He still found ways to put Damien's smart-ass sense of humor in there.
Yeah.
And it just kind of dropped it in, and it fit. It wasn't forced in. So, yeah, it just he really understands that character.
I'm curious how you guys felt about the plot, because in many respects, the plot is like something out of like a 70s detective comics, where the plot is very loose, and the way that the whole thing is resolved is very MacGuffin-y. They go and find these flamethrowers to take down the Black Lanterns, and then when they run out of flamethrower juice, they call Etrigan because he just shoots fire.
Yeah, it was cool to see him in there. I like having him in there.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, I like to see that they pulled different characters from like the DC universe in there that you normally don't see in a Batman book. And I enjoyed the way that this story turned out. There were some things that were unexpected. You know, we get into that third issue, and you know, with the parents and they're recreating their death scenes, which is pretty freaky if you think about it. Because it looked like they were recreating it to the T to get this emotional response from them. So
yeah, that was perfect.
And it's a lot darker than I remember as well.
Yeah.
Because this could have been a regular horror book that we read now. And for whatever reason, when I read it back then, I don't remember it being as dark. Obviously, it's, you know, has the zombie, whatever, kind of vibe to it, but I just didn't remember it being that dark and gritty back then.
You could feel with Dick and with Tim, once they got into the situation where they were in the recreation of their death, Tim was like, I'm going to save him, and maybe he'll be here. Something we can do something to bring him back if he doesn't die this time. But, of course, that didn't happen. But both of them were, like, really emotional once they got into that situation.
And for me, that was what was important about the story. I mean, seeing how these emotions play out. Because I agree with Martin that the ending of this was kind of, you know, just hope. I think, would you say MacGuffin-y? Just kind of wrapped up a little too neatly. And also, like you, I thought I could have used at least one other issue, because I think three was kind of compacted. I know why they had to do that, because this was part of a larger crossover. It wasn't just, if this was a standalone story, they might have been able to take the time to expand it out a little bit. But really, that was the importance, I think. Seeing how the emotions play between Dick and Tim, and I think that's, to me, that's what I think Tomasi was trying to get a hold.
It also reminds me of the Nightmare run that just ended in current Batman, because I mean, that's basically their nightmare, right? Is their parents dying and then trying to go back. So, and there was one question I had for you guys. Like, when Dead Man entered Barbara, did he, like, lunge to save, or did he stand up and run to save and then do the Batgirl swings through?
Yeah, I was a little confused about that. I wonder if it's more of an art thing than anything else, because the panel layout was a little weird. Because to me, it looked like she got up, grabbed Gordon, and jumped out the window, right?
Right. Yeah.
But then afterwards, when Barbara's coming back, like becoming conscious again, they say Deadman says something about, like, good thing she's got really strong upper body strength or whatever.
Right.
Because, like, her legs don't work. So obviously she wasn't running.
Yeah, that's why I was confused about that part too. So I was curious.
Yeah, that was interesting. The thing that I found most interesting actually is relating to Damian. We talked a little bit about how I kind of wish this would have been maybe like an extra issue or two to tell the whole story, but you kind of can't do that because of the crossover. Judging by the way that the story developed over these three issues, I found it interesting that Dick keeps telling Damian not to go to where they are to fight these guys, right? To make sure that Barbara and Gordon are safe. And, you know, Damian being Damian, he's like, yeah, I want to come there. But he's like, no, don't come over here. Had Damian actually gone there, though, they probably could have defeated these guys even sooner than three issues. Because Damian really has no emotional attachments, right?
Right.
So he wouldn't have been, like, taken aback by the fact that, you know, these guys' parents are coming back to life. And not only that, Damian really doesn't give two craps about anything. So even if somehow he was surprised at first by seeing these people, it wouldn't have lasted very long. And it would just continue to kick some ass.
I thought he was also kind of shockingly and uncharacteristically obedient when Dick told him not to come. He did. He didn't.
Right.
You know, I was like, oh, no, Damian would just say, Dad, I'm going.
Yeah, that's true. Although I think at this point he was kind of learning where he needed to be, right?
Yeah.
Like he always tested Dick to see how much he could get away with because Dick wasn't his dad. But at the same time, I think because of that, he respected Dick a little bit more than had it been Bruce that he was partnered with. And as a result, I think it did, in some respects, tone Damien's personality down a little bit.
I agree.
And not just in this book. I'm also talking about like Morrison's Batman and Robin run.
Well, yeah, I think so, too.
Which Ronnie correctly stated as being the best Batman and Robin ever.
No comment.
Listen, we have photographic proof that you said that.
So one thing that I noticed in here is that Dick and Damian were calling each other by name in front of Commissioner Gordon. The one time he was like knocked out cold, but I don't know if he knew that or not.
Well, and that was with Alfred too, right? When Dick is calling Alfred, Alfred's like, yeah, okay, Richard, like it's on the way. And I'm like, Richard, like you probably call him like Master Dick or something. Like if they're out in the field, yeah. He might just call him Batman. Like, that was also a little off. But Gordon was out half the story, so maybe, like, that's the reason why.
Right. Could be. I did like, I know it was, had to do with the ending, and they wanted to, you know, get this done in three issues when he sent for the Mr. Freeze gun, so he could freeze, Deadman could freeze Batman and Robin, and the criminals with the black rings could just go away and didn't know that they were there and then could revive them, but...
Talk about MacGuffin. Like, the flamethrower was MacGuffin, but the freeze gun... Wow. Yeah. Like, if only it were that simple, right?
Yeah. Let's just freeze them, and then they'll just go away. They'll just fly away. Because they won't know you're here.
That's like how you get rid of Batmite. You just ignore him.
Plus, if I had a Mr. Freeze gun, I'd be using it myself on other people, on other criminals. Hell, you know, if you got it, use it. So.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm being silly, but...
I guess. I wonder, I don't know how familiar you guys are with Deadman, but I do wonder, people reading this book, how they felt about Deadman being such a big part of this particular story. And he was kind of a big part of, like, Brightest Day, for example. But not knowing much about him, how much people understood that nobody can actually talk to Deadman. And I think in some pages that wasn't entirely clear, or maybe I read it as not entirely clear, because to me it was perfectly clear that they can't talk to him.
Yeah.
But Tomasi maybe did too good a job at showing that communication back and forth.
Dick had one panel, right, where he was like, Deadman, if you're here, or I assume you're here and listening, go do this.
Right.
The 2017 miniseries, Deadman, Dark Mansion, and Forbidden Love, is pretty spectacular, and it plays on that a lot.
Yeah.
So if you're not familiar, it's more reading.
That series didn't do very well, but it's a good place for Deadman, right? It's like gothic horror, and that's where he belongs.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Sarah Vaughan wrote that, I think.
I think you're right.
But yeah, it was nice to see him. You don't see him a lot, so I enjoyed his appearance.
Yeah, I did too. I did too. Here's a little thing that I don't know if anybody knows, and I tried to look this up, but I couldn't find anything anywhere either. So they send Damien to get these flamethrowers at the mausoleum of Archibald Stanton. And I tried to look up Archibald Stanton, and I only found one. And I wondered if there was any connection and if any of you guys had looked into it. Because the only Archibald Stanton in DC Comics is from The Haunted Tank.
Hmm, that's interesting.
Oh, nice.
And I know they didn't really show the mausoleum or really say, like, what era it was from or who the Stanton guy was. But I thought that was interesting, if that's the connection.
Yeah, that's very interesting. The Haunted Tank used to be a big thing.
Yeah, the Haunted Tank was huge.
Yeah, it hasn't been for a while now, which is a shame.
Yeah, well, there's not really any interest in war comics anymore, so.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
I did find it interesting that there was, like, this secret tunnel from the graveyard to, like, Wayne Tower. Again, everything's connected to Wayne Tower. Gordon would never be suspicious of that.
That's true. And I mean, since in the 10 years since we've had this, there's been a lot more of this, like, underground stuff connecting to Wayne Tower, right?
Yep.
Like Snyder did the whole Court of Owls thing, so you have this, like, secret society stuff. And in the current Detective Comics run, you have, like, what was it, the oh god, what do they call it?
Brother Eye.
Brother Eye, yeah, there you go. So that's interesting, too. I don't think we had a whole lot of that kind of thing up until fairly recently.
Right.
So, yeah, it was good. I enjoy this. I almost wish that it tied even closer to the main Blackest Night story. I mean, like, yeah, we had the Black Lanterns, and you had the little thing with Hal going into the Bat Signal or whatever, but it's kind of tertiary to the story that we get here. And that's probably fine, too, though, right?
Yeah.
And what do you like better? I know in more recent years they have crossovers that are, like, in miniseries, especially they do it in Marvel. And back in the old days, it just would go into an issue. The crossover would be in the issue, and you had to read it. But if you weren't interested in Blackest Night, you didn't have to read this. Do you like it crossing over in the issues or a separate miniseries like it was here?
I think that's tough for me to answer because I like both.
Yes.
I think it just depends on the type of story.
For me, I think it depends on the type of event. Like, if it's a huge world event, then I think seeing in the issues itself and seeing how those worlds are dealing with the huge event overall without focusing on the main event is interesting. But if it's kind of like a standalone event, then yeah, give me 3 issues or 4 issues, mm-hmm. and then I can go into it or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the event is big enough, you can't do it like that, right? Something like when they did Zero Hour. Granted, Zero Hour maybe wasn't the best, but you almost kind of had to have all that extra stuff. Whereas I think in terms of the way people read comics now, you almost need to have the event be contained to its own book and have everything else just be like bonus material.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. What about you, Jay?
I tend to agree with, I prefer it to be contained in its own, you know, whatever book you're reading. Simply because oftentimes you feel with these big crossover events, I don't know, I feel a little bit manipulated at times, like they're just trying to get me to buy these other books, you know, and I don't know if I necessarily want to buy a book, 5 or 6 books that I don't normally read.
You mean like when Superman did all those the triangle numbering?
That would be a one, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I don't mind, you know, doing small type crossovers, like they've done it with The Flash here in Batman a couple of times now, where they've done, you know, the 4-part story or 2 issues of Batman and 2 and Flash. That type of other. I just don't, you know, I'm not huge on crossovers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell you the kind that I don't like. I enjoyed it the way it was here, but when Heroes in Crisis crossed over into the Batman and had a 2-issue crossover, It really didn't have too much to do with Heroes in Crisis, except they mentioned Heroes in Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that sort of falls a little flat. Because it should be, if it is a true crossover, it should be more involved than just mention it, because you wouldn't even need to have a crossover to mention that is going on.
Right.
So, did anybody else have anything to add about this particular book?
Nope, I'm good. I'm glad we covered it.
Yeah, it makes me want to read the rest of the crossover.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of crossovers, so...
Yeah.
Real quick, we wanted to thank Chad from the Lantern Cast for giving us an opportunity to cover this book. We really appreciate it. And we are on Twitter. We're at PodBat. We do have an email if you'd like to email us. It's batpodpodcast@gmail.com. And we are on Facebook for people to use Facebook. So... anything else, guys?
No, sir.
So until next time, same bat time, same bat channel. We will see you later.